Blog Talk Radio.
Have a big day today, don't we? I think we do. Warning everybody up front. I woke up with a sore throat, feel like I got a little something coming on. Probably, I don't know if it's cold or cough or whatever the fuck it is. But did you think I was going to miss today? Not in a million years, bitch. We got the New York primary. I haven't cast my vote yet, but believe you me, I will be casting that vote. And I got a jam-packed show as well, about to happen right now. Later today, I will be on TYT, and I guess I'm going to be on after we know the results already. So my mood will be very reliant upon what the results are. So I don't think you're going to want to miss that. But yeah, as I described yesterday on the show, it's going to be a little bit of an uphill battle for Bernie Sanders. The rules in this case are rigged against him. No independents are allowed to vote in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary, for that matter. And the last time that you could switch parties was in October. Last time you could register was 25 days ago. So it's super closed. There's no doubt about that. And also, as we discussed yesterday, there are some polling places. The places that are more likely to go in favor of Bernie open at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and they do not open at 6 o'clock in the morning like the other ones do, the ones that are more likely to go for Hillary. Now, there is some good news on that front, though, because you're allowed to get off from work either way. So you have a right. I don't know if this is a New York state law or if it's a federal law. I think it's a New York state law. You actually have a right to have 2 hours off with pay to go vote. So if you're in New York, 2 hours off with pay, if you have to go in the middle of the day, that's fine. But that's what we're looking at, man. And we're going to know the results later tonight. All right. So I would give you some more teases here, but I got so much to get to that we might as well just jump right into it. So let me wet the palate here one more time. I got that scratchy throat going. That sounds dirty, doesn't it? To wet my palate. Oh, yeah. That's disgusting. All right, let's do it. We'll start with tax dodging, because apparently that's been a big, big thing recently in the news. Michelle Chen of The Nation did some fantastic reporting on just how much corporate tax dodging fucks over regular people. So she explains here, corporations collectively owe both to the U.S. Treasury and to poorer governments around the world about $100 billion in unpaid debts they've socked away through tax offshoring. According to Oxfam's latest brief on tax offshoring, to close the $100 billion gap in the public coffers, the average American taxpayer would have to shell out an extra $760 in taxes. Thanks to a sophisticated tax arbitrage tactic, in 2012, U.S. multinationals alone shifted $700 billion from countries where their profits were truly earned to locations with very low or zero tax rates. If the $100 billion showed up on the government's books, we could afford to fund essential health care for more than 2 billion people worldwide. Think about that one. Quadruple spending on education in the world's 47 poorest countries, or basically finance the annual budgets for federal Social Security, labor and unemployment, and education program spending in the United States. So look at what we can do with that money. This is just, it's unbelievable when you see the practical implications of still having this money in offshore tax havens. And remember, guys, we've spoken about it before. This is only one way to raise funds for things that I would argue are necessities, not only for the American people, but for people all around the world. So, healthcare, education, I would argue something like paid vacation time, maybe a universal daycare system, which other modern nations have as well. The United States, of course, does not have it. But what they're saying is, even if you just take the step of cracking down on the illegal offshore tax havens, you can fund so much of what you want to do. We haven't even breached the conversation of cutting back on the ridiculous amount of military spending. We haven't even breached the conversation of cutting back on, for example, pork barrel spending. We haven't breached the conversation on cutting back corporate welfare, for example, tax subsidies that are unnecessary. So when somebody like Hillary Clinton comes along and says, unicorns and rainbows is what Bernie Sanders is selling when he says we could do universal health care and universal education. I mean, that's pie in the sky. That's crazy. My dad used to tell me, she loves this line, whenever somebody tells you something's free, look at the fine print. Yeah, Hillary, we get it. We know that it's not like, oh, you wave a magic wand and poof, it's free. It's paid for via tax dollars. But there are a million ways to raise the funds in doing that. One of the ways to do it is to shut down offshore tax havens that allow giant multinationals to dodge paying their fair share of taxes. But again, she acts like it's this crazy thing and we don't have the money for it. Isn't it hilarious? Anytime we talk about programs that are for the American people, for poor people, for middle class people, for regular people, all of a sudden, dollars and cents. Oh my God, somebody, let's get a calculator. Let's crunch some budget numbers here. Are we going to run in the red? Oh my God, is there going to be a deficit? This is horrible. We can't allow that to happen. But when it comes to all the things that we should care more about fiscal responsibility, there, nobody even mentions it. Nobody ever said, the airstrikes that we're doing in Syria and Iraq, put aside for a second whether or not they're working. Okay, that's a separate conversation. I don't know if we have the money for that. That seems pretty expensive when we keep bombing every single day in, day out, and it happens for months, for years on end. Nobody ever says that. Nobody ever says, hey, $4 billion a year in a subsidy, in a corporate welfare check to ExxonMobil. I'm not sure we can afford that anymore, especially since they're one of the most profitable corporations on the planet. Nobody says that. Nobody ever says that. Nobody ever says, hey, man, we spent trillions of dollars on the Iraq War. Perhaps that was putting aside the moral angle of it and the fact that it was an illegal war and it was just wrong, maybe we can't afford that. Nobody ever said that. So it's time to bring us back to sanity. And this was a great article by Michelle Chen laying out in great detail how we can fund so many different things just by going after this offshoring of tax money. Okay. Jesus, the throat's acting up again. Good googly moogly. All right, let's go to Huffington Post and their stunning report about the media. The Huffington Post is reporting on an absolutely stunning new study that shows that our trust in media, Congress, is at an all-time low. That's hard to do. I mean, we've given numbers before about Congress and how much people hate Congress, and I'm pretty sure we've given numbers before about the media as well, and it's always low. I mean, it's always rock bottom, but now we're at all-time lows. So they say the following: only 6% of people say they have a great deal of confidence in the press. 6%. The study mirrors past reports that found the public's trust in mass media has reached historic lows, according to data gathered by the Media Insight Project. The report found faith in the press was just slightly higher than the 4% of people who said they trusted Congress. 85% of people say accuracy is extremely important in media. Timeliness and clarity followed closely with 76% and 72%, respectively, saying those attributes were imperative among media sources. Okay, so that last bit is important because that's telling you what people don't think mainstream media has. So 85% say, all I care about is accuracy. Give me accuracy when it comes to media reporting. Well, if you only trust them, only 6% of people say they have a great deal of confidence in the press. Well, then, you know, you can deduce from that that, oh, you guys aren't accurate in your reporting. They don't think mainstream media is anywhere near accurate. They don't think that they have timeliness and clarity either. Those are the other two most important things, according to the American people, when it comes to what they expect out of the media. And with a 6% approval rating, they have none of it. So how could this have happened? I mean, is the question. That's the only logical follow-up here. Well, honestly, guys, I think it goes back to stuff that we've been talking about for a really long time on the show. There are different biases all across the mainstream media. So, for example, when you talk about MSNBC, they have a Democratic Party bias. Understand, guys, that's not the same as a liberal bias or a progressive bias or, you know, an actual philosophical position on the spectrum that they stand by and they argue for and stuff like that. No, it's a Democratic Party bias, a loyalist bias to the Democratic Party establishment. That's different. So that's MSNBC. Then you have Fox News, the Republican Party arm of the media. It's a propaganda arm of the Republican Party. They're massively biased in favor of that party. Again, not biased towards conservatism or libertarianism or anything like that, biased towards the party, the establishment. Then you have CNN. Then you have, all the nightly news programs on NBC, on CBS, on ABC, you name it. And I would argue that they have a bias towards neutrality, and they have a bias towards the establishment. So that manifests itself in calling everything down the middle, even when the truth is not down the middle. So you'll have them say, Republicans have taken this position on this political issue, Democrats have taken that position on this political issue, and let's move on to the next topic, and you guys can make up your own mind as to what you think is right, what you think is wrong. It's a matter of opinion. Whatever you like more, you know, you pick. If you're right-leaning, okay, you agree with them. If you're left-leaning, okay, you agree with them. That's it. Now let's move on. And there's also another bias when it comes to the neutrality-biased outlets. It's a sensationalism bias, which is the idea that you might want to sprinkle in some stories about Kim Kardashian's ass or Kanye West or something that'll get eyeballs in the middle of your supposedly serious news because you care more about ratings and you care more about sensationalism. Is one of the main reasons why CNN abuses that breaking news banner, is because they know that they have internal research that shows that when they use the breaking news banner, they're more likely to get eyeballs on the screen. So they abuse the fuck out of it. They've done before. We covered it on the show. Breaking news, the Titanic sank 102 years ago today. That would be the opposite of breaking news. Polar opposite. But they don't care. So the American people, they might not be able to voice this exactly how I'm voicing it and explain in detail all the different problems. But they get that gut feeling of, I don't trust these motherfuckers, man. And then we haven't even gotten into one of the saddest things, which is the mainstream media persona. You know, you turn on any of the shows, and you'll see a certain rhythm in how they talk, a certain cadence, a certain inflection over the words, a certain posture, a certain professionalism about them. You know, Chris Cuomo comes to mind, for example, on CNN. And he talks in that anchorly way, where you know that if he's at his mom's house on Christmas or whatever, he's not going to talk like that. His mom will be like, why the fuck are you talking to me in that voice? That voice doesn't make any sense. That's not how you talk. He would just be a normal guy in real life. Oh, I want a sandwich. Let me go make myself a sandwich. That's a normal person. On TV, oh, now let me tell you something in my weird announcer voice. People, look at that. Guys, that is the epitome of fake. That's quintessential fakeness. You're not being yourself in front of the camera. So people look at that, you put all these things together, and they go, oh, these guys, truth doesn't even come into consideration for any of these outlets. Now, understand, I think that print outlets are totally different, and print outlets do a great job. That's where we get all the information for this show from, various print outlets. So I'm not lumping them in when I talk about the mainstream media here. But in terms of, you know, cable news, TV news, the outlets that we already laid out here, none of them care about truth. None of them care about facts. None of them care about objectivity. All they care about is neutrality, which is not objectivity. Neutrality, again, means calling it 50-50 no matter what. Objectivity is, I'm going to tell you the truth, no matter how black and white it may be, no matter how partisan it may seem, facts are facts. So climate change is real, Republicans are wrong, Democrats are right. You're not going to hear that on a place like CNN. Why? Because they have, bring on Bill Nye the Science Guy and bring on Marsha Blackburn, a Republican congresswoman who doesn't know anything about science, and you guys debate science as if it's a 50-50 proposition. It's not. Like debating creationism and evolution. Let's discuss that. We have the answer already. For fuck's sake, tell us the truth. But they won't do it. And that's why 6% of people, 6% of people say the media does a good job. 6%, that's so incredibly small. And then also you have Congress, 4% approval rating. Again, we've discussed this before, but how is it even possible that we vote for these people? And then if you do a poll a month after people voted for them, it's still like 12% approval rating, 14% approval rating. Right now it's at 4%. How does that happen? Well, it happens because it's almost like everybody knows when they go to vote, we're voting for the lesser of two evils, which is still fucking evil. So even if we like the person more than the other person, we're still going to give you bad ratings because we already know you're going to do a shitty job. It's clear to us. And guess what? The American people are right. Because the real problem is money in politics, the corruption in the system, the legalized bribery that we have. So even when we vote for the people that we want to win, and even when they get in office, we know it's like, all right, now time to watch them turn around, turn their back on all the promises they made, turn their back on their base, their principles, their values, and everything, the American people, and just do the bidding of the donors. We expect that at this point. That's why only 4% of people, 4%, guys, that's more unpopular than, you know, Crown was when we decided that we were going to have a revolution against them. Isn't that insane? We have our own government that we pick, and we're like, no, the British Crown was actually better. So that so shows you how deep the rot goes in the system. You have to get the money out of the system. If you don't do that, we're going to perpetually have low ratings, and the highest it'll get is 20% for Congress, believe you me. And for the media, look, we're trying to have a media revolution right now. That's what new media is about. That's what the print outlets are trying to do. And guess what? If their numbers stay this low in the long run, which they will, their time is running out because we're a lion roaring up from behind them. Okay. All right, let me move on to a very depressing story. This is from Public Policy Polling, and it shows the power of propaganda here. I'm going to be wrestling my throat the entire show. We have some incredibly depressing new information from Public Policy Polling here, and it really demonstrates the power of propaganda. So they say, new survey data reveals a depressing 29% of respondents still believe the Affordable Care Act includes provisions allowing a committee to cut off medical care for people at the end of their lives. Quote, to the best of your knowledge, do you think President Obama's health reform law establishes a government panel to make decisions about end-of-life care, sometimes referred to as death panels or not? That's the question that people were asked. 29% said, yes, there are death panels. There are definitely death panels. That's 3 out of 10 people said, yeah, death panels are real. It's in Obamacare. And only 40% said no, which means that 60% of people, the overwhelming majority of people, 6 out of 10 people said either, yes, death panels are real, or, I'm not sure, maybe. This is nothing except a failure of media and a victory for the Republican propaganda machine. And those are two things that we've spoken about ad nauseum, ad infinitum on the show, because both of them are important themes and they're totally true. So for Republicans, you have just this well-oiled machine where they can take the most bombastic, over-the-top, absurd claim, and they have everybody in the party go out on, you know, the Sunday shows and go out to the press and repeat the claim over and over and over and over and over to the point where it becomes a duh. It becomes an of course in the minds of many people who aren't well-versed in the policy issues. And then you also have the different media outlets, including outlets other than Fox News, eventually start running with these lines, and at the very least they propose it as a debatable thing. Hey, the Republicans say there's death panels, the Democrats say there's not, but we might as well discuss it because they're talking about it. So they make it a thing where people go, are there death panels? I don't know, maybe there are death panels. And because they've taken a lie and they've repeated it over and over and over, gee, where have I heard this before, they've made it so that people either believe it or they're not sure. And the truth is, as the old saying goes, still at home trying to put its shoes on while a lie's made it halfway around the world. And the Democrats suck at messaging, they suck at marketing, they suck at getting their points through, and they don't know how to repeat themselves and double down and triple down. So when they come out there and say, no, there are no death panels, people are like, well, I just heard from 492 other people that there are, and you say there's not, and you seem more weaselly and not as convinced, and they're really loud and aggressive about it, and they're really persistent about it and passionate about it. I don't know, man. Maybe it's true that there are death panels. I don't know. And this is what happens. And then, like I said, the media. If we had a media in America that did its goddamn job, the job it's really supposed to do, 0% of people in the country would say that there's a death panel. 0%. Because you know how you're supposed to handle this as somebody whose fucking job is to fact check? Your job is to go, no. That's not only false, it's a malicious lie for political reasons, and here's just how wrong it is. And you can go into detail, and you can explain the origin of the lie, and you can explain how it's gotten to this point, and that's supposed to be the purpose of the media. Data, information, facts, news. Hey, they're wrong. Hey, they're right. I'm here to be the referee. But now we have the referees who stand there. To make an analogy here, a referee in an NBA game is standing there while somebody throws a haymaker at somebody else's face, knocks them down, and then dunks the ball. And the ref's like, I don't know. He says he didn't throw a haymaker. You say he threw a haymaker. What happened in objective reality, I don't give a fuck about. I'm not calling anything. Well, then, ironically, what you really are is biased in favor of the conservatives. Because if you call it 50-50, when the reality is not 50-50, when the reality is 100% on the side of the liberals in this case, well, then you just biased it in favor of the Republicans by doing a neutrality bias. By saying it's debatable when it's not debatable, you just biased the whole conversation in favor of the Republicans, and they get away with the most egregious lies, like Obama's going to kill your grandma. You can't even call bullshit on that, and you can't call bullshit on anything. Seriously, the Republicans can say anything, and there will never be, okay, no, you're just wrong, where uniformly across the board, everybody in the media goes, you're just incorrect. It'll never happen if you can't call it out in this case. Okay. Jesus, all right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, some Bernie Sanders supporters decided to protest a big money fundraiser that Clinton was doing, and I can't wait until I show you the responses from the press. Oh my God, you're going to be like, really? 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 And then also, Rush Limbaugh actually makes an interesting claim about the Republican establishment. You're not going to want to miss that. And Lincoln Chafee, remember him? He ran for president for roughly 43 seconds. He actually has an interesting article about the Iraq War. It kind of blows up a bullshit claim that Hillary Clinton has made from the beginning. So we're going to talk about that. And later on in the show, we have Hillary Clinton went on Power 105, which is a very popular hip-hop and R&B radio station here in New York. And she put the pandering into overdrive in a way I've never seen before. And I've been following politics for a very, very, very long time. So you don't want to miss that. That's a hilarious story. Stay right there, guys.
Bravo, bravo, bravo. right, welcome back, bitches.
Goddamn throat, man. It's, it's always annoying when you wake up and you're like, oh, something's off here. Something ain't right. I think it's the throat skis. Cold or cough or something coming on. All right. Let's go to a very smart protest that was done against Hillary Clinton. And the response from the biased bullshit mainstream media, in this case it's CNN. Some Bernie Sanders supporters decided to protest a big money fundraiser that Hillary Clinton was doing at George Clooney's house. And they threw dollar bills at her motorcade as it drove by. So how did the media take this story and twist it to distract from the main point, which is the legalized bribery in the system and the money in politics? Let's find out.
Of the senators, that the Senator Sanders supporters tossing these $1,000 and $1 bills at the Clinton motorcade. Is it stupid? Is it more than that? I'm curious. She's the only female running for president, and it's dollar bills. It's imagery. I'm curious if you read anything more into that.
I think it's stupid. I think that they have money to throw away, literally, and that it's not changing anything, and that he should collect that money and to make certain that Democrats in the House and Senate be able to support it.
The unfavorable opinion, when they look at Democratic candidates, the opinion of them, 56% negative Democrat registered voters on her, okay? Sanders, 36. That's really where you want to be. Nobody's really ever above anything close to 40 in these kinds of things. What does that mean here and moving forward?
Well, I think it means she's got something she's got to overcome. Let me suggest to you, because some of her strategists have said this kind of quietly, it's not really sort of a big thing on the campaign trail, is that a lot of this is sexism. I mean, it's buried so deep that people just say, well, I don't trust her. She doesn't keep her. And then you turn around and say, well, what politician does? You know, I mean, the governor of New York, of course, is an exception, right? But, I mean, politicians all the time, they change their opinions. They move here. They move there. With Hillary Clinton, though, it seems to be something that's just completely unacceptable. You know, everybody raises money from all kinds of sources.
Not the
she's the one they throw dollar bills at. I think there's an element of that.
That may be the dumbest point I've ever heard in my life. He's arguing, well, I mean, look, all politicians lie. All politicians raise money and get legally bribed. So people only seem to care about it when it's Hillary Clinton. Wait, what? Have you not been listening to anything that liberals and progressives have been saying for decades now? No, obviously we're not okay with it when men do it either. So ironically, he's guilty of what he's accusing the liberals of being guilty of, because you're the one that is arguing for, well, maybe you shouldn't attack her when she raises money and when she flip-flops and when she lies, because she's a woman. So who's the sexist one here? What a joke this is. Are you kidding me? So in one fell swoop, he took all of the policy substance reasons why people are against Hillary Clinton and for Bernie Sanders, brushed them aside, and said, sexism. It's just got to be sexism. It's sexism. And for what Brooke Baldwin said in the first clip there, what she's talking about is, oh, is it something deeper than just stupidity? Right, it's stupid to protest money in politics. No, I think you arguing against it is stupid. But what she's talking about is, throwing money in the air and a woman being there. That's something that happens in strip clubs. It's like you're making it rain on her. That is definitely sexism. Oh, please. I mean, the way that they're able to twist things, it's actually incredibly creative on one hand. Like, it's such utter bullshit, but it is creative. Like, you know what this made me think of? It's like if somebody did a protest about, oh my God, she voted for the Iraq War, hundreds of thousands of people died there. So somebody does a protest where, for example, they lay on the street and, like, they have some fake blood around them, and they pretend to be, you know, a victim of the Iraq War, and somebody's holding a sign that points that out or whatever, And, you know, these people on CNN can come out and say, oh, I see what you're doing here. You're using blood, men, women menstruate, they get their period. You don't do the blood protest when it comes to men, you only do it when it comes to women. Why are you using blood? Are you trying to say something about her period? Are you trying to say something about her menstruation? I think you're sexist for doing this. Well, look at what you're doing. Oh, my God, this is so sexist. You're using blood. Obviously, you're referring to periods, and she has one, and the other people don't. And obviously, you're okay with voting for the Iraq War when men do it, but you're not okay when she does. No, all of that is completely and utterly made up. How about instead of strawmanning progressives and liberals and putting in their head what you want them to believe, you listen to what they're actually fucking saying? People will tell you, if you talk to somebody who supports Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton, they will give you a fucking essay on the reasons why they support her. Him over her. They'll say, okay, well, the Iraq War is probably the biggest one. Hundreds of thousands of people dead. War that costs trillions of dollars. Hey, the vote on the Patriot Act. She may not have realized it at the time, but she voted for the bill that ended up taking away our Fourth Amendment rights. There's no more protection from unreasonable search and seizure. The NSA can spy on us all day long, and there's no recourse for it. Hey, there's no Eighth Amendment protection from cruel and unusual punishment. No more due process, no more habeas corpus. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. Hey, she supported outsourcing deals, so-called free trade deals. Like, she supported NAFTA, for example. She lobbied for the TPP 45 times before she was against it. We can give you so many specific policy substance reasons, and their only rebuttal, because they can't respond to that, they can't respond to it because we're right, we're more liberal on these issues. What do? They pivot, they deflect, and they say, sexist. You must be sexist because she's a woman. Well, if you're saying that she should get a special pass because she's a woman, so you're not allowed to disagree with her for policy substance reasons, then again, ironically, you would be the sexist one. Because you're not in favor of equality. You're not in favor of equality. You're in favor of special rights for her as a woman to be above criticism when it comes to horrific votes like the Iraq War vote, the Patriot Act vote, her stance on the various outsourcing deals. You're saying, no, you can't treat her the same as you would treat a man. You have to treat her with special rules because she's a woman, and if you don't, you're sexist, even though ironically I'm saying I'm setting up special rules for women, which would make me sexist, but pay no attention to that, because I'm going to do my hacky fucking political attacks right now, and we're going to smear you. Guys, you know, at face value, it's absurd. Bernie calls himself a feminist. He has the majority of young millennial women voting for him, many of them feminist. He has male feminists voting for him. He literally is the most liberal senator in the Senate. And you're going to strawman him and smear him and call him sexist because he and his people dare to do substantive protests against her. Hey, I don't like the fact that you raised $675,000 from Goldman Sachs in a few speeches. You made more from one speech, $225,000, than Bernie Sanders made in an entire year. You and your husband, the Clinton family, has raised $3 billion from special interests in your lives. In just personal speaking fees, when you go and you give speeches to corporations and various rich people, you guys have made over $100 million. We think that affects you because we're not stupid. We think one of those people, when one of them picks up the phone and calls you, if/when you're president, you're going to listen to them. You're going to care more about them than some random grandmother in Wyoming. That's why we're concerned. We don't like the corruption. We don't like the legalized bribery. We want to fundamentally change that system. One candidate is promising to do that. The other one is not promising at all to do that. And in fact, when you bring it up, the counterargument is sexist. Beyond pathetic.
Now, there is no question that my throat will hurt more later on. Oh, good googly moogly. All right. Now we're going to go to Rush Limbaugh here in a second. He hasn't been in the show in a while. Hey, I want to congratulate Rush.
because Rush being on the show today means that he's going to get more press and more coverage today and more viewers today than he's gotten in the past 3 years combined. It's really funny, man, because that's actually probably true. Well, 3 years combined is not true. But does Secular Talk get more people watching the content, listening to the content, than Rush Limbaugh does if you compare a day versus a week versus a week? Absolutely. This guy's a fucking dinosaur. He's talking to himself on the radio. He's talking to himself and your racist uncle. That's it. That's the only people he's talking to. Rush Limbaugh is going to make an interesting claim here about the Republican establishment and who they'll end up supporting. Let's listen.
If a guy gets close to a 37 but doesn't get there, still the majority has a majority votes, majority of delegates, and they take the nomination away from, we're going to lose the voters, right? What's going to, folks? Patience, Rush. The Republican establishment is prepared to vote for Hillary Clinton if it means holding on to their fiefdoms. The Republican Party is prepared, if Ted Cruz gets a nomination, to not care whether he wins or loses. In fact, if Ted Cruz is the nominee and loses the general, the party will be happy. They'll be able to blame the loss on conservatives and conservatism and be done once and for all with conservatism in the party.
Oh, please.
The party's primary objective is self-preservation, not winning the White House. In this cycle, given the vagaries of this cycle, the Republican Party's primary objective is maintaining its own power structure and base for the current people that occupy it. And the dead giveaway for that is when you hear some of them openly, publicly say that they will vote for Hillary rather than Trump. And some of them have even said that they'll vote for Hillary instead of Cruz.
Okay, so he's 50% correct there and 50% absolute lunatic, making no sense, dead wrong. Which is actually pretty solid for a Limbaugh claim. Usually he's 100% incorrect and he's stupid. He just sounds like an idiot. So the part that he's right about is many people in the Republican establishment would vote for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. And he's right that many people have just come out and said that. Lindsey Graham, for example, is like, I ain't voting for that guy. I would never vote for that guy. In fact, he hated Ted Cruz. Now he's campaigning for Ted Cruz because he hates Donald Trump that much. And there are many other examples, too. In fact, most prominent neoconservatives say they will vote for Hillary over Trump because Trump, half the time when it comes to foreign policy, he'll say, look, Syria, ISIS, I don't care. Let Vladimir Putin take care of ISIS. Let's stay out. It's none of our business. The neocons obviously want more war all the time, no matter what. So when they hear that, they're like, okay, no, never him. Never him. Now, again, the other half of the time, he's like, let's go invade everywhere, and I want to bomb civilians and kill them. The neocons love that. But they're still scared of some of the time when Trump expresses a belief in isolationism. Now, Hillary, on the other hand, she said, hey, I view the world as a chessboard, a global chessboard. And this is the old Cold War mentality. It's us versus Russia, and everything else is just minor. They're pawns in the game here, and we need to make sure we do tactical maneuvers, and we need to make sure that we have power and control, and we have to have our hands on our natural resources, and business is important, and all these different things. And she wants a more, quote, muscular foreign policy. Well, that's why the neocons are like, oh, rock and roll, I'll go with her. They might disagree with her on some social issues. Hey, she's for gay marriage. We're not for gay marriage. She might be more liberal at home in some respects, where she wouldn't, you know, drastically cut the social safety net programs where Republicans would. But whatever, we'll suck it up for the economic stuff at home. We'll suck it up for the social stuff because foreign policy, we kind of agree with her. So Rush is right. Many have come out and said it. We covered the story. I gave you specific quotes from neocons who said, yeah, no, we'll support Hillary over Trump.
Now, where Russia's wrong is Ted Cruz. No, Republicans would vote Ted Cruz over Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt about that. I haven't seen any indication they wouldn't vote for Ted Cruz over Hillary. Cruz, when push comes to shove, he's going to heel. He's a little bitch to the establishment. Trump is just uncontrollable. He might listen to the donors, he might listen to the establishment, or he might not. Nobody knows because he's a fucking crazy person. Cruz is crazy also, but when push comes to shove, he's probably going to listen to the establishment and to Wall Street, and he'll also mix in his draconian backwards stances on social issues. He's a Christian theocrat. He wants Christian Sharia. He'll push for that stuff, and he'll listen to the donors and Wall Street on the other hand. So they would vote for Cruz over Hillary, but they would not vote for Trump over Hillary. Many of them are going to vote for Hillary in that case. But also what he gets wrong is why that is. He makes it seem like, oh, the Republican establishment, they're so fundamentally not conservative that they can't wait to sell out real conservatives and go to Hillary Clinton because they're so liberal themselves. That's the argument Rush is making. The Republican establishment is so liberal that they're going to abandon the more conservative people. Only Rush Limbaugh could come up with an argument that's such bullshit. No, Rush, it has nothing to do with liberal or conservative or principled philosophical ideologies and concepts. They don't give a fuck about any of that. They care about their money. They care about Wall Street and the donors and doing their bidding. Do you not get this? Like, he's been covering politics for decades. He still doesn't get the fundamental driving force in the Republican establishment, the Democratic establishment, and just the establishment writ large. What that is, and what their main concern is keeping the status quo. He touches on that, but he eventually comes to his conclusion where he says, well, no, it's just that the Republican establishment is fundamentally liberal, so we'll go with a liberal over a conservative. No, the Republican establishment fundamentally cares about their money and cares about corporate profits, so they're going to pick whoever they think is best for corporate profits. That's what happens. They're going to pick whoever they think is best for allowing them to continue to take all the money and run out the back door as the middle class and the poor get screwed. It's got nothing to do with conservatism. It's got nothing to do with liberalism. It's got to do with power. It's got to do with being the establishment. It's got to do with corporatism. That's what it has to do with. So this may be the first time ever we've given Rush even a little bit of credit on a story. He's right that they'll vote for Hillary over Trump, but virtually everything else he said there is wrong. Okay. Let me do one more, then we'll take a break. Let's go to Lincoln Chafee.
God, he's so funny. Remember when the hashtag was on Twitter, Feel the Chafe? That basically sums up his entire campaign. That's how it went. I think he got roughly 8 people to support him. The sun was in his eyes, too, so he voted for Glass-Steagall, or voted against Glass-Steagall, something like that. Remember that excuse he made? My dog died, blah, 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 blah. All right. Former senator and former Democratic candidate, Lincoln Chafee, actually wrote a great article in the New York Times on the Iraq War, and he makes a really interesting case against what Hillary's vote was. Now, she apologized for her vote, but she often explains it by saying, well, look, everybody voted for it, or almost everybody voted for it, and it was to give the president the option of war, not actually to go to war, and there was no third choice. I mean, what were we going to do? There was no middle ground. There was no middle ground. It was either for or against. Everybody was for. Okay, it happened. Well, it turns out that that's actually not true. So there was kind of a middle ground on this, so Chafee explains. As someone who was in the Senate at the time, I have been struck by the contours of the debate. The situation facing the candidates who cast war votes has, to my surprise, often been presented as a binary one. They could either vote for the war or not. There was no middle ground. On the contrary, there was indeed a third way. A mere 10 hours before the roll was called on the administration-backed Iraq War resolution, the Senate had an opportunity to prevent the current catastrophe in Iraq and to salvage the United States' international standing. Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, offered a substitute to the war resolution, the Multilateral Use of Force Authorization Act of 2002, Senator Levin's amendment called for the United Nations approval before force could be authorized. It was unambiguous and compatible with international law. Okay, so understand what this amendment was, and this is actually a brilliant idea from Carl Levin here. What he said is, it's not just a straight up or down vote. So we're not saying, yes, go to war, give Bush the power to go to war, which he took. It's not that, or no, no war. We're going to nothing, not even going to consider it. The middle ground was, okay, we're not saying yes or no, but we are saying if we go to the UN says yes, then we can go to war. But, of course, the United States being the United States, they're like, international law. Oh, that's a good one. International law, schminternational schlaw. I don't care about that at all. Just go to war and fuck the UN. Well, according to international law, any country that goes to war has to get approval through the UN. So I love how the proposal from Carl Levin, which is a good proposal, is just saying, hey, let's follow international law. And if we follow international law and then the answer is still you can go to war, well, then we'll go to war. But if we follow international law and the United Nations says you can't go to war, well, then we won't go to war. So it was an extra layer of oversight and accountability. If the senators voted for the middle ground, so not even, hey, voted against the war, if they just voted for the middle ground here, we wouldn't have had the war in Iraq. We wouldn't have had the war in Iraq. There would be minimum 200,000 people that are still alive, mostly civilians. We would have saved trillions of dollars, and we would have prevented this absolute catastrophe and one of the biggest foreign policy disasters in the modern era. But since people don't care about international law, since people didn't want to be nuanced on it, they didn't want to be nuanced, we know what happened. Hillary Clinton was one of those people who was proudly not nuanced, who not only voted for the war, voted for the war, and in the process snubbed international law when presented with the opportunity to embrace international law and take a middle ground on the vote. So you need to stop and think about this. You have one candidate who just voted against the war, period. Didn't even go for the middle ground, was just right and said, no, I don't see the evidence. I'm not going to fucking vote for the war. The default position is no war unless you prove to me we need a war. You didn't prove it to me. I don't believe you. I don't believe you, neocons. So one voted against it. The other one had the opportunity, the option of a middle ground or for it. She said, I'm voting for it. Why? Because this is Hillary Clinton. Where are the political wins, baby? Give me some of them political wins. Even if it means doing an illegal war and violating constitutional rights, I will look for the political wins of the time and do what I think you want me to do, because principle schmincibles, I don't care about them. I just don't care. So she ended up voting for an illegal war. And, of course, when it comes to constitutional rights, we did cover the story the other week. She was giving speeches about how we need to ban flag burning, punish it with a year in jail and a $100,000 fine. Do you have no idea how the fucking First Amendment works? Even Antonin Scalia, a far right-wing prick, was like, this is obviously protected by the First Amendment. This is political speech. This is free expression. Like, who could be against this? Hillary's like, I'm against it because I think the polls show that the American people are don't really like flag burning, so I don't care about rights anymore. Illegal war? Yeah, let's go for an illegal war because that's the mood of the country at the moment. So I'm for illegal wars and hurting, killing civilians and taking away your rights in the Patriot Act, for example, if it means you'll like me in this brief second. There you go. That's her character. You have the choice. Bernie Sanders, who's been principled and consistent and right, or her. Okay. Let me take a break here. When we come back, we have the New York Times reporting on some foreign policy news. Then we have a school in California that is discriminating against atheists. And Hillary Clinton, oh boy, she trots out some extreme pandering. It should be a sport in the X Games. Extreme pandering. All right, you don't want to miss that, or actually, you don't want to miss any of it coming up, son. It's going to be good. Stay right there.
I'm like, hey, what's up, hello? Sit your pretty ass as soon as you came in the door. I just want to chill, got a sack for us to roll. Married to the money, introduced her to my soul. Showed her how to whip and now she remixed it for low. She my track queen, let her hit the bando. We be counting up.
All right, we're back, bitch. And let me give you the bad news, and let me give you the I told you shows, and a whole bunch of that all meshed into one. Aren't you lucky for this segment? The New York Times is reporting on some foreign policy news here. They say the Obama administration is preparing to broaden its military campaign against ISIS in Iraq and Syria by increasing the number of special operations forces who advise Syrian rebels, and it is also considering the addition of army attack helicopters to fight against the militants.
So what I want everybody to do is not worry here, because this time, I'm sure that the troop increase will work. Oh, what's that? It hasn't worked from when we started all the way back in 2001 in the case of Afghanistan, 2003 in the case of Iraq. The entire time, we still haven't been able to get rid of the problem. In fact, we've made it worse. We're essentially picking at the scab that is jihadism in this region. Weird, you know, when you stay there and you occupy the land and you end up, on purpose or not, killing many civilians, it has the effect of further radicalizing the region and making people want to strike out against you. Again, I've given you guys the quote on the show from Zawahiri, the head of Al-Qaeda, where he said, ISIS is our sworn enemy. For those of you who don't know Al-Qaeda and ISIS, there's beef in the streets, bro. They've been going at it. They're like the Crips and the Bloods, basically. And he says, well, if the Crusaders are here on our lands, truce with ISIS, and then we will fight the Crusaders. But if they're not here, I'm going to fuck you up, dog. So as Bill Maher said on his show, well, wait, they're telling you, hey, get the fuck out, and if you get the fuck out, we'll fight each other, and it's a problem that will take care of itself. Now, is it perfect in that, hey, there will be zero jihadists left if we get out and they end up fighting each other? No, of course not. But this is where the Kurds come in. This is where the Shia militias come in. And this is where the Muslim nations in the region, the moderate Sunni nations, step up and do their thing. And then they take care of it because it's their fucking problem. But no, I mean, every single time I read stories like this, I think of Vietnam. Because this is exactly what happened in Vietnam. I mean, we've covered the story. There's a clip of John F. Kennedy talking about how, no. For everybody in Vietnam, it's their fight. It's not our fight. Again, remember, liberal Democrat who was increasing Vietnam the entire time, he said, we're not sending ground troops to fight there. These aren't boots on the ground. No, these are special operations forces. These are advisors on the ground who are helping our allies there. The entire time, what was he really doing? Of course he was increasing the troop levels. There were literal boots on the ground, and it was mission creep. Well, this is exactly what's happening with Obama today. This is exactly what's happening with the Democrats today. Obama said in a meeting, again, this is another story that we covered, you know, these Republicans are crazy. They wanted us to do interventions in 7 different countries. And then you cut to a speech that Obama gave months before, where he's trying to sell the Iran deal, which, by the way, is something I like. And he said, I've called for interventions in 7 countries. We've done interventions in 7 countries. So when it's convenient for him, he's like, these Republicans are crazy. They want to do interventions in 7 countries. And then when it's convenient for him at a different time, when he needs to show his tough guy bona fides, he's like, well, I've called for interventions in 7 different countries. So you can't have it both ways. That's a good thing or a bad thing. You either use it as to say they're crazy, or you use it to say, hey, I'm so tough. You can't have it both ways. But this is the Democratic Party. The choice between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party today on the issue of foreign policy is hard imperialism, that's the Republicans and the neocons, or soft imperialism, that's Obama. That's the Democrats. That's Hillary Clinton, although I think that Hillary Clinton might even be somewhere in the middle between the neocons and Obama's position, or even just flat out with the neocons, where the idea is, no, I'm not going to do a crazy ground invasion with like 100,000 troops, but I'll put 7,000 advisors and special forces on the ground, and I'll do endless airstrikes with planes, I'll have helicopters, and I'll do drone warfare. That's what I'll do, all that stuff. I'll do soft imperialism, soft war. Well, the effects of it are the opposite of what you want them to be. Oh, look, we killed ISIS people and we're eliminating the problem. Well, no, actually, when analysts go back and count the number 3 months later, there are more ISIS people. So, and again, don't get me wrong, I'm not against fighting ISIS in principle. Somebody's got to fight him. I want the Shia militias and the Kurds to fight him and the people in the region to fight him. Somebody has to fight him. I just don't want it to be us. Because we've shown since we've been there since fucking 2001 in Afghanistan, 2003 in Iraq, that the problem has gotten worse. We've exacerbated the problem. That's not an opinion, that's a fact. There are more jihadists today than there were when we started the war on terror. This is just like the drug war. I got an idea, let's wage a war on drugs, and then we'll eliminate drug use or limit it big time. wrong. You've increased drug use. There are now more people doing drugs than there were before we blew $1 trillion on a literal drug war where thousands of people died on the border, and the drug cartels have gotten more powerful, and there's been a massive increase in crime. So all the social ills you were trying to cure, you made worse. But then obviously there are also ulterior motives that come into this, which show that it's more than just about, we need to defeat the bad guy. It's rarely ever just about that. The humanitarianism and altruism, these are not the main concerns of the U.S. government. I hate to burst your bubble. If that were the case, we wouldn't be besties with Saudi Arabia, a Wahhabi terror state, a Salafi terror state that says all atheists are terrorists. We behead people for sorcery and witchcraft and a bunch of stupid shit that aren't real crimes. If you really care about altruism, cut off your relationship with them immediately, or at least try to untangle it. But no, we don't do that. We get closer with them because it's not about altruism or humanitarianism. A lot of it has to do with, call it what it is, the military-industrial complex. There are very powerful people in the country who get really, really fucking rich the more war you do. And there are no big contracts, and there are the endless creation of tanks and planes and weapons. And it ends up being a very profitable industry. This is what Eisenhower warned against. But it's not only that, it also has to do with imperial ambitions. It has to do with power. It has to do with control. It has to do with natural resources. It has to do with the U.S. viewing the world as a chessboard with Russia as the other main enemy. So we got a jockey for position here, and all the other smaller countries, they're just pawns in this broader game of us versus Russia. So, Russia has Syria is their pawn. They have Assad who's aligned with them. So even though Assad is fighting jihadists, we got to be against Assad because he's with Russia. What the fuck are we doing? This is so stupid. It's so immensely stupid. We've made the problem worse. I want it to be better. Understand, if we want to do legit humanitarian aid to the Kurds, for example, by all means, I'll sign up for that right now. If you want to go through the proper legal channels, whether the United Nations, NATO, Congress, what have you, and you want to do legit special forces operations to go after high-value targets, whether it's al-Shabaab and Boko Haram or ISIS, I'm all with you, man. But when you have an open-ended, endless war where you do mission creep and escalate with every passing month, no, I'm not interested in that because I don't want to spend the money, I don't want our people to die, and I don't want the problem to get worse and to exacerbate it. We can't even get clean fucking water in Flint, Michigan, for kids to drink, and we're concerned about what the fuck is going on in Raqqa, Syria. How stupid are we? No. Stop with the mission creep. Stop with the increase in troop levels. Stop pretending that's not what you're doing at the same time. The coy democratic game that Obama's playing and JFK played. I'm not escalating. I'm just sending in some more advisors. That's all I'm doing. And then, you know, you blink. And at one point, we had 1,000 troops in, and now all of a sudden, we have fucking 8,000. We have endless drone missions, endless airstrikes, now military helicopters, too. The drone program kills 90% the wrong people, according to their numbers, not my numbers, not Code Pink, their numbers. And we're like, geez, I wonder why the problem's not getting fixed. This is why the problem isn't getting fixed. Let's stop doing it and move in the right direction. Oh, boy. Let me, I gotta wet the palate again. As dirty as that sounds. I think I'm confusing that with, what's the old gross phrase that means something sexual? I think it's wet your beak. I think that's, that does sound even dirtier. Wet my beak. Who comes up with these things? That's pretty funny. I think we should start using that. Should try to throw that in the middle of a story somehow. All right. go to some anti-atheist bigotry here, which is quite depressing, if I don't say so myself. There's a school in California called Palmdale High School, and apparently the school board isn't very fond of atheists. So Raw Story explains here, a lawsuit filed in federal court last week accuses the school district of blocking scholarships from atheists while allowing them for Scientology. The district allegedly refused to let students compete for $17,950 in scholarships from the Freedom From Religion Foundation and $1,750 in scholarships from the Antelope Valley Freethinkers. According to the atheist groups, Palmdale High School declined to notify students of their scholarship offers, which required applicants to submit an essay on the challenges of being a nonbeliever. Deputy Superintendent Jeff Foster reportedly said that offers from atheist groups would, quote, upset some parents. So let's understand exactly what happened here. They block the atheist scholarship. They allow the Scientology scholarship. And get this, the Scientology scholarship required a religious essay, a position on homosexuality and guns, and it only applied to religious students. So how's that for just a direct snub of atheists? Okay, it's amazing to me how casual the bigotry is against atheists. Like, it's just so nonchalant, and nobody makes a fucking peep. Because, again, take out atheists, put in any other group, and see how you feel about it. So, you know, they did a scholarship for whatever, this golf scholarship given by this group or that group, but they didn't allow the black scholarship. So it might upset some parents to allow black people into the school. So we had a black scholarship, now we're not doing a black scholarship. We had a Jewish scholarship, we had a Muslim scholarship, we had a Christian scholarship, we had this, we had that, all these different scholarships. You know, we're... I think it would upset some parents if we do that kind of scholarship, so ex-nay on that group's gay, none of that. You can't do it with anybody else. With atheists, they do it, and then when people are like, hey, that's fucked up, man, they're like, what? I don't understand. What do you mean, what's fucked up? No, we just decided no to the atheist scholarships and to snub the atheists because they're atheists. And we don't want to upset the parents or anything. I mean, hello, they're atheists. Hello. Yeah, no, that's not okay. I mean, just casual, like, yeah, fuck them. Atheists, what do you mean? The parents are going to be upset. No, fuck you. How about that? Casual anti-atheist bigotry. And that's the thing that's super frustrating is that, like, for example, in 7 different states in the United States of America, it's on the books that atheists cannot run for office. Now, understand, that's totally unconstitutional. It's already illegal because federal law overrides state law, and in the Constitution, you can't have a religious test for office, so atheists are allowed to run anywhere. But the fact that the wording is still on 7 different state books, and nobody said, hey, you know, maybe we should just repeal that. Here's a quick bill. Let's all vote in favor of it and move along. Nope, nope. If it was any other group, imagine the response. Again, we're just saying the Jews. The Jews are the problem. You can't run if you're a Jew. What? They're Jews. What do you mean? Like, what's wrong with you? Why would you say that? For atheists? And if you dare make a peep about it, whiner, complainer, wanting equal rights and whatnot, wanting to get a scholarship. Fuck off, man. It's unbelievable. So now there's, again, a lawsuit against the school where... The atheist, dude, we're given a scholarship. One of them is worth nearly $18,000, and you're just rejecting it because you don't like us. Well, you're kind of hurting the kids in this respect. You're not giving them an opportunity with something that might help them. It might be a fantastic thing. And you're doing it solely because you don't like us, and you don't think the parents will like us, and you're just discriminating against us because of who we are and what we are. So they're doing a lawsuit, and they're saying, especially if you're going to allow the fucking cult Scientology to have their scholarship hurt, obviously you let the non-believers have it. Isn't that amazing, guys? If you don't believe in Harry Potter or Narnia or Pokemon, you know, you're the crazy one and you're the one we're going to discriminate against. Oh, but if you have your little cult that believes in Xenu and the fucking volcano where the people fly out and everybody gets their planet when they die, or is that Mormonism? I don't even fucking remember the culture meshing together. Then you're cool. Then there's no problem. What a backwards world we live in. Okay, do we need to do the story now if Hillary's pandering? I can't hear you. Do we need to do the story now? Say it. I got to hear it. I think we got to do it. Power 105.1 is a really popular hip-hop and R&B station here in New York, and Hillary Clinton sat down for an interview with them, and she put the pandering in overdrive. I've never seen anything like this before.
I believe in that. What about ghosts? You believe in ghosts?
All right.
I believe in spirits.
Next is famous.
I'm just wondering. Don't grill them. You don't?
I do.
Well, I hope so.
I do.
I mean, my goodness.
I have four kids. I absolutely do.
Well, then you know you have to.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. No more questions? They said, no, she has to go.
What's something that you always carry with you? Hot sauce.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you getting information right now? Hot sauce in my bag, Swag?
Hot sauce.
Really?
Yes.
Now, listen,
yes.
I just want you to know, people are going to see this and say, okay, she's pandering to black people.
Okay. Is it working?
Oh, God, stop it.
Okay. No, seriously, hot sauce. I've been eating a lot of hot sauce, a lot of raw peppers and hot sauce.
That's why you're coughing. You might need to slow down.
I need to. Yeah, I'm having a rebellion against it because I think it keeps my immune system strong. Uh-huh. I really do. I think hot sauce is good for you in moderation. Let's not go.
I just like it.
What the fuck did I just watch? That was unbelievable. Come on, man. What are you doing, Hillary? But this is what she does. Like, when in her mind and in the mind of her campaign, when it's like, okay, we got to reach out to the different groups. How do we do it? They come up with the most offensive, just classic pandering ideas, just so obviously, predetermined, and I say this, you answer with this. And we see right through you, Hillary. Come on, we see right through you. And perhaps the most frustrating part of all that is it's insulting. It's insulting, and it's not even necessary. You don't need to do it. Why would you do that? According to the polls and to the numbers and from the previous dates, you're already winning the black vote by a landslide, and you somehow think the way to appeal to them is to do over-the-top pandering. That's not going to gain you a single vote. Not a single black person listening to that was like, God, I got to vote for her now. What are you doing? Jesus. Imagine she, like, okay, so some people might, if they don't know hot sauce in the black community, they might think like, oh, what do you mean? You're basically one level below. That's it. Just one step below snap answering fried chicken. What do you always keep with you? Fried chicken. No, Hillary, don't say that. Hillary, don't say that. Hillary, what's your favorite trick? Kool-Aid. Love me some Kool-Aid. Hillary, why is your bag so large? I have a watermelon in there. I just carry it around. I don't know what you want me to say. But I'm just like you. I'm exactly like you. Yeah? Am I hip? Am I cool? And she was this close to fucking reaching her pocket and taking out a Fetty Wap CD. I just carry around some of my favorite music. Just gonna put my Fetty Wap on the table here. She's my trap queen. I ain't never letting go. I'm just saying. Stop it! Stop with the fucking pandering! And actually, the two other parts of that pissed me off. One of them was when she admits it, like, because Charlamagne, who's one of the hosts there, he's not falling for this shit. There's no way he's falling for this shit! So, he's like, I'm just telling you, like, people are gonna say, you're fucking pandering to black people. And she, awkward pause, nervous laughter all around, and then she goes, is it working? No! No, it's not working! And then actually, just a separate conversation, the spirits point. That actually might have pissed me off even more than the over-the-top pandering. Because, I almost want to disqualify you based off that. What do you mean? Now, obviously, unfortunately, most presidents in U.S. history have been religious, so they believe in space fairies and voodoo and whatnot. But she's like, yeah, of course. Do you believe in ghosts? No, but I believe in spirits, which is the same fucking thing. So you want to be the most powerful person on earth. And, you know, there are times where you've been laying in your bed at night or something, and you're like, ooh, I think I felt the breath of my great-great-grandmother. No, no, I want to give you some medication, okay, and I want to go to therapy with you because, goddamn, you shouldn't be hearing voices. You shouldn't think I'm reaching out to some spirits, bro. And look, I may be in the minority within the country where most people might believe in ghosts or spirits or whatever, but allow me to say this very clearly, you're all wrong. No evidence of it, not true. It's no different than I believe in Santa Claus. I believe in the Easter Bunny. Stop. Especially if you want to fucking be the person that has the ability to launch fucking nukes. I don't want you hearing voices. Call me crazy. All right, I gotta keep going here. I gotta fucking keep going. I got three left, but I won't get them all in. A UC Berkeley student whose family fled Iraq in 2002 was booted from a Southwest Airlines flight for speaking Arabic. So Raw Story explains here. In a story originally reported in the Daily Californian, 26-year-old student Carldine Makhzoomi states he was flying home from attending a dinner at the Los Angeles World Affairs Council with Secretary General of the United Nations Ban Ki-moon when he stopped to make a call to an uncle. Makhzoomi explained that a conversation was conducted in Arabic, and as he said goodbye, he used the phrase Inshallah. I know I'm probably mispronouncing that, but forgive me, which translates as if God is willing. The student said that after he hung up, he noticed a female passenger looking at him, who then got up and left her seat. Makhzoomi was told the woman thought he said Shahid, which meaning martyr, a term linked to Islamic terrorists. All right, so what happened then is he was kicked off the plane. He was searched, including a pat-down of his genitals. The FBI questioned him, and he's not suing, but all he wants is an apology. Apparently, he teared up a little bit. 9 hours later, he finally got on a flight to get back home. He says, look, I'm not suing or anything. Or at least as of this moment, he's not suing. But I want an apology because I do think this was a clear case of an irrational bias, you know, an anti-Arab bias or anti-Muslim bigotry. The person probably assumed, hey, this person's Muslim, and they made irrational decisions based off that, and this guy had to go through a terrible ordeal here where, again, he says it was in front of people where he had the pat down and people were looking at him like he's a terrorist, and he was tearing up. And he's like, you know, it feels wrong, especially we have a guy who is just with Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations. Like, and here's my thing on this. So if you see something that you think is genuinely suspicious, should you say something? Of course. Don't be stupid and, like, you know, suppress logical, rational part of your brain. But I think when this story really crossed into being horrendous was after you get the clarifying information and after you have a conversation and you figure out exactly what happened, well, then you should be reasonable enough to know, okay, well, we searched. There's no issues here. There's no weapons. There's no nothing. He explains to us, hey, he was just the United Nations. The story checks out. He's a fucking Ban Ki-moon. Hey, he didn't say Shahid. He said Inshallah. All these different things. After you get all the facts, well, then you have to be reasonable and get the guy back on the plane. But apparently there was one moment where this guy said, is this Islamophobia? And that pissed off some of the people in charge who were determining whether or not to let him back on the plane. And they're like, yeah, you're done. You're not getting back on the plane. Guys, we gotta be smarter. So, again, if you see something that you think is suspicious, yeah, say something. And in this case, okay, the woman may have gone a little overboard and thought she heard something she didn't hear. But, okay, she said something, fine, no problem. But after you get all the facts, after you get all the information, after you get all the data, after there's a perfectly logical explanation about everything that happened, if you still say, fuck you, no, now there's a problem, and now you're the bad guy, and now people are right to get angry about it, and they're right to say, come on. Come on, what are you doing? The initial suspicion, okay, you misheard something, and perhaps you were reading too far into the situation, but okay, whatever, it happens. So you thought there was some suspicion, not really. But then after all the facts, you got to be smart about it, and they weren't smart about it, and then this did eventually become a case of genuine anti-Muslim bigotry. Look, I don't like the word Islamophobia personally because Islam is a doctrine. And so it's fine to disagree with that. I disagree with that in the same way I disagree with Christianity, the same way I disagree with the Bible, same way I disagree with Hinduism. And there's nothing bigoted about saying, hey, I think those are myths. And that's what it is. So I don't like the word Islamophobia, but anti-Muslim bigotry means the same thing. Oh, you have an irrational, you know, bias against all Muslims. And at the end of this story, it did become that when you learn that, oh, they learned all the facts and they still said no, and they still tried to fuck this guy's day up, and that's what happened. So it's also big of him to only want an apology, too. I mean, there is grounds for some sort of a lawsuit here, but we'll see what happens moving forward. But I just want everybody to be smarter, okay, and be more rational about how stuff like this unfolds. Okay. So Mississippi recently passed an anti-LGBT law. It's one of many red states that are doing this as a backlash to the recent gay marriage ruling from the Supreme Court. And some smart people decided to do a little research and look into Mississippi in the wake of this law to see what kind of porn they watch. Would you like to take a guess? So Mike reports here. A fresh batch of user data from the adult website GameLink.com indicates that gay porn happens to be a favorite among smut lovers in the Magnolia State. Mississippi comes in sixth overall in regards to the number of gay porn scenes, behind only New York, California, Ohio, Texas, and Florida. So let's be clear here. I think some of those states is just because there's a huge population there. New York and California are gigantic. So it's just a numbers game that there will be more gay porn users, even if it's a smaller percentage. So that makes sense. Texas, kind of the same thing. But Mississippi, being on that list, number six, oh, they're overrepresented big time. So they continue here. We've seen this strange phenomenon before. Back in 2014, the extremely homophobic country of Kenya was outed as the world leader in Google searches for both gay sex pics and gay porn pics, despite sodomy being straight up illegal there. So how many times have we seen this play out? It's like the Republican politicians who are massively anti-gay or the right-wing pastors who are anti-gay who eventually get caught in a New Jersey Turnpike bathroom with a dick in their mouth. When you're so loud and obnoxious and vehement in your opposition to something like gay rights, it's a case of thou dost protest too much. Why are you so against it? Well, I don't like what's going on here. And Dan Savage said it best. They are externalizing an internal struggle. So beware the holy rollers. If they're the loudest ones in the room, they usually have something to hide. All right, guys, I'm out of time. Exciting day. I will be voting shortly. Can't wait for the results. I'll probably be on TYT tonight, so you could check that out too. All right, guys, have a good rest of the day here. Peace.